the Public News Service DOA Newscast, December the 1st, 2023. I'm Mike Clifford. Activists in New Mexico are tapping today's World AIDS Day to announce they'll ask their state legislature to provide more money for treatment and for prevention.
Marsha Martinez with Equality New Mexico says many primary care providers fail to prescribe treatments called PrEP and PEP, worried they're specialized and complex. His group will ask lawmakers to provide more funding to the Department of Health to initiate educational outreach. He says the treatments significantly reduce risk and the effects of AIDS.
Since the beginning of the epidemic in the 80s, we've never had as powerful of a preventive tool as we have in PrEP.
Martinez says the Department of Health reports there are between 3,000 to 4,000 people in the state living with HIV. I'm Roz Brown.
It is estimated that since 1981, more than 40 million people have died from AIDS, which in some countries is still the leading cause of death. Currently, almost 30 million people are using therapies to inhibit HIV and prevent AIDS. And from CNN, six more hostages who had been held in Gaza are back in Israel, the Israeli military said Thursday. That follows the release of two other hostages earlier in the day. The latest releases came after a temporary truce between Israel and Hamas was extended for a seventh day. Egyptian and Qatari negotiators are working to extend it further. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said the pause has helped get more aid into Gaza and secure the release of hostages. Meantime, the Students for Justice in Palestine chapters at the University of Florida and the University of South Florida are filing lawsuits against the deactivation orders issued by the State University System Chancellor Raymond Rodriguez and the governor there, Ron DeSantis. We get the details from Tramiel Gomes.
The groups claim the looming deactivation order comes at a time when the conflict in the contested territories of Israel and Palestine are a matter of vital public discourse, depriving them of essential resources. Hina Shamsi is the director of the National Security Project at the American Civil Liberties Union and is part of the legal team representing the students.
Our client has made a very brave decision to challenge state officials' attempt to restrict student speech in a case that they, in the hope, sends the strong message that censorship in our schools is unconstitutional.
The state's deactivation was based on the group's alleged connection to a toolkit supporting Hamas's attack on Israel, which violates a Florida law against providing material support to foreign terrorist organizations. However, neither group has a formal relationship with the National Students for Justice in Palestine, which the chancellor later acknowledged.
This is Public News Service. Now to North Dakota, where farming landscape is seeing policy shifts dealing with corporate ownership of agricultural interests. Now there's a fresh debate at the federal level.
Earlier this year, the legislature loosened restrictions under the state's longstanding anti-corporate farming law. In Congress, groups like the National Family Farm Coalition call for passage of the Farmland for Farmers Act, which would restrict the amount of farmland large corporations can own. North Dakota farmer Ben Vig says he's happy to see the federal proposal, noting the broader corporate influence within agriculture these days.
The idea that we have checks and balances when we purchase our food, well, sometimes the corporations own everything and we're subjected to what they put as a price.
He's referring to corporate dominance in areas like meat processing, and foreign ownership of U.S. ag property has emerged as a concern, with the USDA reporting that foreign investors hold about 40 million acres of American farmland. The North Dakota Farmers Union says it doesn't think the federal bill would overlap with the state-level changes, but it does support the congressional efforts. I'm Mike Moen.
Older people across Washington State are facing strains on their budgets. Eric Tadoff lets us know that there are government programs that could assist them, but they are underutilized.
An assistance program like the Senior Property Tax Exemption is a prime example. King County Assessor John Wilson says the median value for a home in his county is about $790,000. If someone qualifies for a full exemption, he says they would save almost $5,000 a year.
$5,000 a year saving in property taxes is nothing to be trifled with. But the shame is a lot of folks don't know that that program even exists.
Wilson adds that the state legislature has expanded the senior property tax exemption program by increasing the economic threshold. He says in 2024, his office estimates as many as 30,000 more people will apply for the program.
Finally, Catherine Carley lets us know advocates for unpaid caregivers in Maine say they'll need continued support beyond the recently passed paid family and medical leave program.
Caring can be a full-time job with many out-of-pocket expenses, like paying for gas to get to a doctor's appointment or ensuring a parent has enough food in their fridge. Bridget Quinn of AARP Maine says state grants to help caregivers with up to $5,000 in expenses will end next year, and lawmakers need to start considering ways to ensure that help continues.
That is basically having a 24/7 job for a lot of people that they never get a break from, so there is a significant amount of caregiver stress and burden.
An AARP report finds unpaid caregivers in Maine provide nearly $3 billion in economic benefits, with women providing the bulk of that work. I'm Catherine Carley reporting.
This is Mike Clifford, and thank you for ending your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.